Welcome, book friends, to Let's Get Literary, the literary podcast with me, Sam Vega,
Courtney Berry,
Jen Atwell,
where we discuss some magically meaningful or maybe terrible books each month. Join us for a special chat. Welcome back, listeners. We're back with a special episode where we chat about Crying in H Mart. We have an amazing guest today, Jessica Gonzalez, who serves as a graduate student in the Center for Inclusion and Campus Involvement, and is also a graduate student in the mental health counseling program.
In the Hamilton Holt School.
Oh yeah. We are celebrating two things this month, which is the Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, as well as Mental Health Awareness Month. Jen, do you want to read a little bit about the book?
So, Crying in H Mart. When Michelle Zauner was in her mid-20s working as a waitress and struggling to launch her music career in Philadelphia, she got a call that her mother was ill. She put her life on hold and flew home to Eugene, Oregon, to be with her mother through the final excruciating months of her battle with cancer. This is Zauner's searingly candid coming-of-age story of growing apart from, and then back together with, her Korean identity and of forging her own path in the wake of a devastating loss. With humor and heart, she tells of growing up Asian American, straining to meet her mother's expectations, moving across the country, and returning home to reckon with grief. She recalls treasured childhood holidays spent in her grandmother's tiny apartment in Seoul, and, now in adulthood, learning to cook the Korean dishes that revive and nourish those memories. She savors the unexpected solace of weekly trips to her favorite Asian grocery store. Vivacious and plain-spoken, lyrical and honest, Zauner's voice is as radiantly alive on the page as it is on stage. Crying in H Mart is an exquisite debut, a book to cherish, share, and reread.
She can read.
I can. I did it. I didn't even mess up.
I know.
So, what did we think?
I loved it. Maybe because it was such a sad book and it made me, like, I don't know, center into my emotions and all that stuff. I cried so much reading it. It's terrible, but I loved it.
I agree with that. Like, I really enjoy memoirs, especially, and I just feel like this one was very open, honest, very personal and vulnerable story to share, and I think she just encapsulated that beautifully.
Well, it seems like we grouped the people who really loved it together. I did not really love it. I thought the beginning was very sad, and it was. I didn't associate with any of it.
The beginning? The whole book?
I weeped during the beginning, and then I didn't like it. Wasn't my jam.
Definitely wasn't my jam. I appreciate how it was very well written, I think. In my opinion, did a good job of capturing every single emotion of the family, the characters. Loved that part, but there's something about death that triggers me. And I think it brought up a lot of feelings, especially since she was like a caretaker to her mother. And my grandmother passed when I was like 14. And so that triggered a lot out of me. Mm-hmm. And I was somewhat of a caretaker for my grandmother for a long time at that age. And I think that was a lot for a middle school young child to experience. And to know what death looked like at the age of 14, but to also like go through all of those experiences with her, and her being in the hospital for a long amount of time, or like, you know, long periods of times, just triggered a lot for me. So I didn't love it. I think that's the only reason why. But it was well written, and it captured a lot of emotions, and I think it was a good thing to kind of like bring all of those emotions up for me still at some point. But like I was reading through it and I was like, damn, this is so sad. And Chris was like, well, why don't you just stop reading it? I'm like, I wish I could, but I can't.
But it was sad. I wanted to love it too.
Yeah,
I did. Because it was all over the internet, this amazing book. And I love Korean food.
Well, and also, Jen, I've heard you talk about the book a lot or mention it a couple of times. So I was like, oh, I'm excited to read this.
I love Korean food. I wish growing up that I would have been able to experience more of it instead of starting my love of it as an adult. So I was so excited to read about this magical store, this magical grocery store.
It is magical.
That I've never been in, although it was talking about crying. But it, I don't watch Grey's Anatomy because who would want to cry that much in a 45-minute period? And so I think that I just cut myself off from this book. Like, I get that she's crying in H. Martin, that's a memory. But I had said this when we were recording another episode. I couldn't figure out why it was called this. I was expecting this to be a book where it was a reflection of me. And it was just a book about somebody else. And so I read it because I had to read it. Which is, you know, what happens. But I love a book with kimchi in it and I just didn't love this book.
Can't help it. It did remind me of Grey's Anatomy.
Thank you.
It did. Big time.
That's so funny. I actually was very close to an H Mart because I was reading this book actually in New York for my cousin's bridal shower. Shout out to Gedalia. And right down the road from her house, there was an H Mart. And I said, I have to go. I don't care what happens today. That is my one stop. And I went in and I did exactly what she was doing in the beginning of the book. I went to the back where the cafeteria was. I sat down and I can feel everything she was feeling. And in that moment is what gave me so much respect for her as a human and having that outward emotion and feeling in that moment. And I can see how that could happen. You know, she was seeing her culture around her. She was experiencing people eating her same foods, things that were, you know, sparking a memory and, you know, something in mental health that we know is it's the smallest things. It could be a smell. It could be a sound. It could be a food that you're eating that could bring up all of these emotions and these feelings. And I understood what she was going through in that moment just from sitting in the cafeteria, you know, waiting for my food to be able to see what was happening. And I think from that point on, I had such an appreciation for everything else. And, you know, it's exactly what you said, Courtney. It's so well written that it's hard for you to kind of like almost remove yourself from the character because you're like invested now. But then I could also see the side of like, I don't like it because, you know, it's not my culture. It's not fully like, I don't see myself in it or anything like that. But I think the fact that it was so well written is what drew me to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the outward conversations about mental health and how open she was about it, I think was something that was definitely needed. And I think that's probably why it was all over the place on the internet, on TikTok, on, you know, Instagram. I think it was because of how open she was about her mental health and how she was like essentially pushing it away for a while and just stuffing all of her emotions in and then eventually realizing like, that's not working. I have to go to therapy. I got to talk to somebody. I got to do something about it. And then that's when it really started to open up about how she was trying to navigate that mental health so that she can be a better human to her mother who was also suffering in a different way.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like I was invested in the character from like the mental health perspective of kind of witnessing, you know, perfectionism, depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, all of these things kind of coming up. But I think I also like related to the character in a sense, especially like towards those last several chapters where it was, you know, really focused on kind of witnessing her mother deteriorating. And my grandmother had Alzheimer's and passed away after my freshman year of undergrad here. And I remember like kind of witnessing that process of what it was like, you know, to see her deteriorating. Then she had good days, then it was back to bad. So I think that kind of back and forth of like, you have hope on those better days and then you lose hope on those, you know, worse days. I definitely related to that personally. So I think that also really stood out to me from the book.
I can appreciate the fact that she was so, I don't know, she's a perfectionist, and but I also think she did a really good job of, again, capturing like the emotions, but to also, I appreciate the fact that she was able, as a woman of color, to have, I think, representation of women of color being able to speak about mental health.
Yeah,
was something that I appreciated for sure.
And even how she reflected on her Asian culture and how there's that sense of perfectionism and how you have to be, you know, a certain level of successful and things like that. And even looking at that way that she was just able to melt in private, even if it was in private, she was still able to show that emotion and really articulate it well in the book. And, you know, even just looking at, I dog-eared quite a few pages as well as, you know, highlighted some things. And one of the things I highlighted was, alone in the privacy of my car, I finally let the shock melt away into tears. Everything I had ever done in my life, so monumentally selfish and insignificant. But just even seeing like how she was able to reflect on the fact that she was selfish and she was able to melt away in that moment, because she was saying, you know, nothing else mattered now. What mattered was me and how I felt in this emotion and how I was able to be strong in that moment. But now I need to take a minute for myself.
Yeah. The one part that kind of really stuck out to me, and I continue to remember this, is, and it kind of, I guess, relates to Black Girl Call Home in the sense of suppressing our emotions as women of color and not addressing mental health, but for her mom to also like continue to remind her, save your tears for when I die.
Yeah. That's very,
I mean, damn. It's kind of invalidating in a sense of like, you're not allowed to cry. You're not allowed to show any emotions. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a time when you really, 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 really need to cry. So save that.
Yeah.
I don't know. That kind of like really stuck out to me. And every time, like, I'm not sure if you guys do this, but I try not to prepare for the worst. But every time my mom calls me, I always answer because I just never know what's going on. And that's always been, I've always been that way since I was young and experiencing things with my grandmother. If I don't answer, and the first thing I do is like, if I hear her tone is off, or if I can sense something, if she's not as energetic, if Kathy is not calling me like, hey girl, what's up? I'm like, mom, is everything okay? That's like the first thing I say. And if she calls me like back to back,
right?
Because I'm just always like, my grandmother died at a really young age at 62. And you know, back then I thought that was like super old, but now it's like so young. And my mom's like in her mid 50s, but I can understand when she got that phone call from her mother. And her mother was like, I can't remember exactly what she said, but she basically was like, I have cancer. I need to tell you right now. And I can't wait to tell you, right? Isn't that what happened? And she just got it out. And I was like, oh my gosh, like my heart. Like I just gasp for air because I would hate to be on the other end of that phone call.
Right.
And so far away.
Did we have favorite parts, least favorite parts?
I know one thing that I really liked about it was how perfectionism was this like common theme throughout. Because I remember I kind of marked it where it was like early on, like first few pages, she's talking about how she was striving to be perfect, have the perfect appearance, then kind of going into college, like striving to be good in high school, but kind of also trying to find herself in a way. And then even at the end of the book, trying to be the perfect daughter to take care of her mom. So this idea of perfectionism was something that was like instilled in her so early on that it just kind of carried on throughout her life. But it's also something that, especially towards those developing years of high school and college, she was also like trying to find herself and separate from that. I think kind of trying to give herself some grace to be authentic to who she was or wanted to be, but then also trying to keep that family value of having the perfect appearance, you know, taking care of her skin and doing her makeup and things like that, that her mom was like, emphasizing. So she was trying to find that balance, but like really struggled with it. And I think the way that she wrote all of that within each chapter was incredible. And I feel like it was just very authentic and vulnerable, which I really appreciated seeing that piece.
I think Brené Brown, I think we would all agree that Brené Brown would love this book.
Oh, yeah. Yes, 100%.
Absolutely.
I've never read a Brené Brown book.
It's okay. I don't think I've ever read one either. I just have seen her TED Talks and I know.
Okay, good.
She's an expert on shame and vulnerability. Like, vulnerability is like her thing.
Yeah.
It's her favorite word.
It is.
Her favorite emotion, I guess.
Yeah. You get to read something from her soon.
She has a book called The Gifts of Imperfection.
Yes.
Definitely recommend that one.
Yes, that one. And then she's got Dare to Lead. I've heard a lot of them, but we are reading one of hers.
Yeah.
We are? What are we reading?
You Are Your Best Self with
Toronto Burke.
She was here.
She was.
Okay.
In 2019.
Part of the book that I kind of felt for her as a character was the moment that, like, I think she was expressing how she was expressing if that she was not prepared for, but she basically wasn't prepared for her mom to die first. And her mom had prepared themselves for her father to die first because of all of the things he had done in his past, and smoking every day was his struggle with addiction and all those other things. And then for her to say that he was so shell-shocked and did not know how to respond, put a lot of weight on her. So he leaned on her a lot for that stability and that support. And then when she passed, when Peter came, her husband came to visit, and she said, "Hey, Mom, Peter is here." And I remember, like, I've heard this due to just being around people and having family members that have passed, that the last thing to go is their hearing if somebody is on their deathbed. So they can literally hear everything you say. And for her to announce that, "Hey, Mom, Peter's here. I'm going to sleep upstairs tonight." And her dad slept downstairs in the bed with her. And her going through the moment of, like, not being able to enjoy her time and her intimacy with her husband because she could not even fathom feeling any kind of joy or pleasure or those kind of moments. But then when her father called for her downstairs and said, "Hey, honey, it's happened."
Hey there, we're just checking in. The next couple of minutes might be a little bit hard to listen to. Feel free to go ahead and skip to the 20-minute mark.
And for her to come downstairs, pick out her mom's outfit. And then have to dress her. And her reaction or her response to her bones and her body being so cold and so stiff and so hard. Like, I literally was visualizing every single moment of that. And I could see how, like, how challenging it was. But, like, as a parent, I don't think I would ever allow my child to do that. And I got to the point where I was like, "Chris, if something ever happens to me, don't let my child see this. Like, don't let him remember me like this." And I'm not sure if she, like, I wonder why that moment was, I guess that's a question mark for me, is, like, why she did it and not her father. Because, like, as a mother and as a parent, I would never want my child to see me like that. But for her to, like, have to dress her and go all through all of these emotions, and, like, how I think she heard something pop and her reaction and her father's reaction, her husband's reaction, like, they were like, "Is everything okay?" basically. Like, oh, I would never, never. And she kept saying, "For what? Like, why am I dressing her? So they can put her in a bag and so they're going to burn her. Like, what's the point of all of this?" And for her last moment to see her mom in the black body bag, and her regretting the glimpse, or her, like, regretting the moment that she, like, opened her eyes because she tried to turn away, right? Like, it just, I don't know. That was like really, really dark and will stand out to me. And I literally went through every moment and every emotion mm-hmm. with her, I think.
Yeah.
And it's not that I didn't like the book, because I, again, like how well written it was, but it was just really sad for me. And
yeah,
it's hard for me to read sad books. So
that brought up like a core memory, I think, that I shoved so far into my system. But I was fairly young when my grandmother passed away too. And she had 8 daughters and sons. And I remember vividly, like, it's like a core memory of my mom and I in, I think, a like department store shopping for underwear for my grandmother to wear for the funeral. And my mom just like, I don't know, like freaking out, and then starts sobbing because the woman is like, the woman who's trying to help her like shop for it was like, so it's like, this is our special occasion. She's like, it's for my dead mother. Like, stop. But she's like, just leave me alone. And in that moment, I was like, oh shit, like this is for my dead grandmother, you yeah. know, in that moment. So it's like, I don't know. It's seeing her go through all of those emotions and those feelings. It was difficult for sure.
I didn't mean to sigh like that, but I felt every moment of that. I felt that. Sorry, Jen.
I just heard this.
Yeah.
So I grew up watching Gilmore Girls all the time.
Yes.
And there's that episode where Lorelai Gilmore is sent to Victoria's Secret to buy Gran, her grandmother, mm-hmm. fresh underwear. And she has this exact conversation. What is fresh underwear, number one?
Right. I was just about to ask that, but.
Why is this important? And why am I doing this? But that just reminded me of that.
Maybe I should change my rating.
Higher or lower?
I feel like higher. Because I have so much to say about it. Maybe I should change it to 4. I didn't love the content. Maybe that's why. Mm. But I like how well it was beautifully written, but I didn't love the sad parts.
Yeah.
And usually, you know, Sam, like when you run away from things, mm-hmm. you read a book and you want to put it down because you don't want to see yourself in it. And like, I know you have that mm-hmm. emotion sometimes, or that experience sometimes when you read books that you can relate to. And you see yourself in, I think I saw myself in moments of her mm-hmm. And parts of her. So, but I've never eaten Korean food.
Excuse me?
I know that's probably offensive, but I have not.
I am offended.
We need to do something about that.
Y'all, I have the pickiest palate.
We're going to figure it out.
We were talking to Frederick Joseph, and we were talking about how book publishers or editors, whoever make these decisions about the book covers, recommend making the cover more recognizable to a larger audience, a broader audience. And I'm disappointed. Maybe I'm disappointed. I think I'm disappointed in the fact that you had to put freaking noodles with chopsticks on the front cover. Mm. I mean, they're nicely illustrated noodles and chopsticks, but I remember when you look at books by Asian authors and being a graphic designer, I'm hyper aware of that now, mm-hmm. of the illustration, mm-hmm. of the font. And if that's feeding into a narrative of making your book covers closer to a stereotype, which is disappointing.
Mm. No, I can see that.
Yeah, I feel you. What would you do, Jen?
So there are things that are not stereotypical, that are associated with being Asian. There are also things about this cover that are, I hope we're intentional in H Mart has a red logo. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that's why the cover is red. In my tiny view of Asian culture, maybe it has some positive form of its significance of their color red in Asian culture. Maybe I just don't know. But the font is very, I don't know, it's a hand illustrated, it's handwritten. I don't know, do you have to put noodles and chopsticks on a front cover?
No, I was just asking as a graphic designer and as an Asian woman, what would you do differently?
Maybe being aware, maybe not put stereotypical Asian things, but what would that look like? I don't have a solution. But I mean, it's about a Korean grocery store, so I might be complaining for nothing.
I don't know.
It takes place in a Korean grocery store.
I think your point is valid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very
especially
valid.
After our conversation with Frederick. Mm-hmm. Especially after our conversation with him. I think it's pretty valid.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. You could put a Louis Vuitton pattern on it and called it Crying in H Mart and it would have been the same.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it would have gotten as much hype then, thinking about the side that Frederick was talking about. Like, would people pick it up off the shelf? Because it is aesthetically pleasing to a larger mass.
And does the average human know what an H Mart is?
I didn't.
I didn't either.
Mm-mm.
I can't wait until they build it.
It's coming. There's going to be one here.
2022.
I can't wait until they build the H Mart. Let's go on a field trip.
Is it going to be off of Colonial?
Mm-hmm. By Sam's Club?
Sam's Club.
And by Sam's Lotte Club? Market. Have you been into Lotte Market? Lotte Plaza?
No.
Sam's Club.
Giant. Off of East Colonial?
Mm-hmm.
Sam's Club.
West Colonial.
West Colonial.
West Colonial. So the opposite way.
Mm-hmm. It's by Lotte Plaza. Mm. It's like a giant Costco-sized Asian grocery store.
Huh. I might have to go over there.
It's magical. Well, do we want to share our emojis, our star ratings?
Yeah. I'll go first.
She's so proud.
Wow.
Maybe I'll go last because I think I might want to change my emoji now.
I want to change mine too.
Oh my goodness. Jessica?
I'll go first. So for the emoji, I picked the pink heart with the yellow bow. And I think the reason I picked that is because, again, I just really appreciated the authenticity and just the way that every single word and sentence, like, you could tell that thought was really put into it. And I feel like she just perfectly kind of wrapped everything up to tell the story about her life, her upbringing, the grief that she experienced and what she went through losing her mom. As for rating, I would say a 4.5 out of 5. And the reason for that is because I just wanted to see a little bit more from the mental health side, a little bit more into what that felt like to her in that moment. And then even like as she learned from it and grew, like what did she think about what she went through? Kind of to see a little bit more of like that reflective piece.
Mm-hmm. Would you recommend this?
I would definitely recommend it. I think it ties in several different pieces of mental health, culture, and just, I think it's also a story about becoming and identity and like trying to find yourself.
Mm-hmm. I'll go next. My emoji would be the grocery cart, which by the way, would have been appropriate to put on the cover. Grocery cart. Maybe not noodles, grocery cart. My star rating would be 3 stars. Would I recommend this? You know, I've existed saying that I would recommend that anybody reads any book because people need to read more books. Had that not been my mantra, I don't know if I'd recommend this. Yes, I would. It taught you things about Korean culture. Taught you the joys of kimchi. Are you two ready?
I'm ready.
I think I'm ready.
My emoji would be the empty battery and thinking about how much she was trying to give, but she had nothing in her. So like trying to give with an empty cup.
Mm.
And then I would definitely 5 out of 5 for me would definitely recommend this book. I thoroughly enjoyed how well Michelle had written this and how much she explored different areas of her thoughts and just even going into her emotions and stuff and really breaking a lot of the stereotypes within Asian culture. So definitely love this book and would recommend.
Well, I was thinking about changing my emoji because initially I was thinking the red heart with the broken pieces or piece, two pieces. But now I think I want to change it to the sun and the cloud emoji.
Okay.
I picked that one because, so it's partly cloudy and then partly sunny, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the cloudy part is her experience with her mother's illness and terminal illness and death. Mm-hmm. But then the sun, because I think a part of her, she was able to kind of finally be a human being and be a person and not operate in this robotic life of being a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. I think a part of her was shining in her vulnerability. So, and I also think Michelle did a great job of, again, writing. And I would give it a 4 out of 5. Initially, I was thinking 3.5, but a 4 out of 5. Would I recommend it? Sure. Yeah, I would recommend it.
All right. Well, thank you again, Jessica, for joining us on this episode.
Thank you for having me. I'm so grateful.
Yes. I guess until next time.
Is it time?
Is it time?
TTFN. Courtney's rolling her eyes. Let's Get Literary is co-hosted by Sam Vega, Jen Atwell, and Courtney Berry at Rollins College. Each month, you'll find a new episode on a book we've chosen for many of the Cultural Heritage Months. On occasion, we might choose a special and meaningful book to us to discuss. We'll chat about books and give you a sneak peek into what we'll be discussing next. Have a love for books and want to be a guest host or suggest a book for discussion? Email us at cici@rollins.edu. cici@rollins.edu.